Hey guys, this is Cole Weicker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's gonna bounce down, it's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Everybody, and thank you for joining us again tonight. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes Show. We are your green and gold gospel, your only source for Tampa Bay Rowdies coverage all year long. We are full of spirits. We are full of energy. And Al Lang is going to be full of fans this upcoming weekend. We are live, coming to all of your ears on Radio St. Pete Online. We are part of the Beautiful Game Network and presented by Roughneck Scarves. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Joining me tonight on this episode, Sir Mr. Matthew Cox, you are wearing a fantastic shirt tonight, my friend.
So I was debating whether I was going to try and pull off the Clint Dempsey broadcast booth look, and then I realized, you know, you're the only one that sees me, so I didn't want to ruin that. Maybe I'll try and pull that off at a pregame show sometime. yes, I am wearing the Forward Madison drip kit, and not just because it was the closest thing handy, and I just threw it on because, you know, no one should have to look at me doing podcasting topless, especially you, but definitely at least because I'm wearing it in honor of Gustavo Fernandez, the younger brother of Leo Fernandez, and soccer crush's crush of the week. That is totally the reason why I have this on. I swear. I am excited about this weekend, about the full capacity. And you know who else is excited about it?
Who?
The person that we're going to hear from later tonight that I've been teasing online. I'm going to go ahead and spoil it. Well, I'm not going to spoil it. I guess I don't know if it's spoiling it because you're going to find it anyway. I talked to Zach Steinberger about 2 hours ago with some thoughts on the season so far, this weekend's game, and some other issues. I will admit I did not go into this expecting to make a Karate Kid and a Civil Rights Movement reference in the same interview, but here we are. You'll get to hear it in a little bit. It was very cool. Thanks to Zach for doing that. We'll play that audio in just a bit. This is the happiest I remember. Maybe it's just because it's the first one of the season. This is like the happiest I remember being for a show after a loss, especially a very unpretty loss. But we're going to get to that. I don't want to drag the whole thing down right now.
Well, when you have the gap in points that you do because you've had the excellent start that you've had and nobody's expecting to go undefeated for the entire season, you know, sometimes you kind of just shrug your shoulders and go, eh, you know, we're still two games ahead of everybody else right now. So, you know, it's fine.
Well, and when you look at some of the other results that went on in the Atlantic Division last week, number one, losing 1-0 probably maybe shouldn't be such a shock, and especially like there were some wild results. Like we could very easily not, like we were still going to be in first, but maybe not by 5 points. But stuff went a little crazy. There's I don't know if you've watched it or if you had a chance to watch it. I'm going to assume not, because I know you've been busy. But I did when I got home earlier this afternoon over lunch. Watch the first episode of Loki. And I was kind of waiting for, after seeing these results, waiting for some agents from the Time Variance Authority to jump out and try and rectify this timeline, because it certainly seemed that some someone's been messing with the sacred timeline, at least the way the season had been going so far.
I mean, speaking of time and making pop culture references, it felt like these guys were trying to navigate time backwards, and like it was almost like Tenet, you know, where it was like just the way that the guys were playing this weekend. Yeah. We're going to get into that tonight. We're going to certainly look forward to this upcoming game this weekend here on Friday night. Our executive Patreon producer tonight is the great and honorable Jeff Herndon. Thank you so much for your continued support of the podcast. It does help make everything we do possible. If you want to have a reaction live on the air while we're recording, of course, you can always tweet us at the Unused Subs Pod Twitter handle. That is the easiest way to get in touch with us. Of course, mine is at underscore S underscore Cundiff, and Matt's is, of course, at unsub underscore Matt. So the Tampa Bay Rowdies go up to play at the not quite the real home field of Charlotte Independence, but nope, kind of sort of the home opening field for right now, the Sportsplex at Matthews.
Been there.
Trot out a bit of a different lineup. We all knew there would be some rotation. If you listened to our post-game show last week, we had gave everybody a good forewarning that that was something that was going to happen. And, well, the boys played a soccer game for 90 minutes.
Tenet style.
And that's all about we could say about that.
Well, because I've actually watched Tenet. Like, it must be, I must watch about 75 times. And I'm not even trying to understand it. It's just interesting. I'm impressed with the way they, like, pulled the movie off technologically. And also with the fact that the, protagonist is Denzel Washington's son, looks nothing like him but sounds exactly like him. It always blows my mind too. I'm just trying to figure out, if the Rowdies were playing that game Tenet style, did they leave the final touch in the BMW or in the fire truck?
All I know is when we're watching that first the play that leads to the first Charlotte goal developing, and it like hits off the post and we clear it off the line, and then there's the penalty kick, and then you've got the missed penalty kick a few minutes later, and I'm just like, all of this is like backwards to what reality should be. Like, it should be a missed penalty kick at first for a bad call, and then you should get the penalty kick for the good call, and then she'd have like the post and the, like, it just felt like all of those things happened in like the wrong order. Like, it should have been the other way around. Like, it was at the end of the game, not at the beginning of the game type of deal. Like, yeah. It just,
I remember thinking in that first little, that kind of opening segment there when you know they were getting chances in the Rowdies box and had the ball go off the crossbar, and then eventually called for penalty. First, after the crossbar, I was like, okay, haven't made a lot of mistakes this year defensively. It's bound to happen sometime. We're still good enough to deal with it even when we do. Let's regroup, and oh, never mind, there's a penalty.
Here's my first question, and we have to touch on this. Did you agree with the first penalty decision? I thought it was clean cut. I thought absolutely 100%. Lasso went in kind of lazy a little bit. The forward had cut the ball in between two defenders and was intentionally fitting between a tight space. Drew mm-hmm. some contact, went down easy. I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the specifics. I know that I had much less of a problem with the first one than I did the second one.
I think the other thing, too, is, and I think most of us, you know, watching the game at the pubs and watching the game with friends in general, and even if you weren't, if you were watching it alone, you know, that first ball hits the post on the build up to that exact play. And then we clear the one off the line, off the weird deflection, and then they get the penalty kick little, like, you know, 30 seconds to a minute later. And it kind of just felt like the universe was saying there should have been a goal on that first kick. We're going to make this happen.
Right. Yeah. Well, and there, you know, there were lots of signals from the players on the field. And of course, the Charlotte fans felt one way about it, that the the ball off the bar did go in. A lot of us, I didn't see enough to convince me or not.
Charlotte fans, excuse me. I'm sorry. Did I hear the word Charlotte fans? What are those? Yeah. I knew that there were Rowdies fans there. There was a good contingent of Rowdies support.
I definitely heard the Rowdies fans. I saw the what's it called? Jack's Brigade, the front office sanctioned supporters group. I saw them. I believe they're also referred to as the silent minority because there weren't a whole lot of them and they didn't make a sound at all. But, you know, they paid their $49.99 and got their swag.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. We heard Nancy's tambourine all the way to Tampa. So I mean, it was just one of those things where it was like, yeah, it was a Rowdy's home game.
I even saw neutrals commenting online. They're like, oh, man, there's like 15 to 20 Rowdy's fans there. And I'm like, I don't think there's that many.
No, I think it was like maybe
5 or 3, maybe it's less than 10.
In fairness, I know the Rothwells and the Solches were up there celebrating an 18th right. birthday party and everything else. And so there was a big family ordeal there. I mean, those are, for those that don't know them in particular, you know, that's a family of diehard Rowdy supporters that are in the section every single week, you know, that were up there for a big family celebration time. So, you know, there actually was a decent clip, and they were some of the more ardent supporters. You know, Nancy was up there. Of course, you know, you guys got a chance to talk to Adam before the game, but Adam Martin's, of course, up there. He's a faithful Patreon supporter of the show and longtime listener, longtime Rowdy's fan and supporter himself, the stats department. I mean, we have to say, whether it was 10, whether it was 15, it was still a Rowdy's home game because we had some of the best people up in Charlotte for that game.
I mean, to be honest, the time that it was just me and Adam, it was a Rowdy's home game.
I mean, again, what are Charlotte fans? It's to me, it doesn't feel like that's that much of an accomplishment because reasons. That being said, as much as we showed up in the stands, the team was present. They were present. Now, the Tampa, obviously, Charlotte gets the first penalty kick. They go ahead and put it away, 25th minute. A few minutes later, they get a second penalty decision. Now, this one caused a bit more of an outcry. The second penalty kick. The Charlotte player comes down into the box, legitimately beats Jordan to the ball, kicks the ball away from him so Jordan does not touch it, and then essentially basically runs into Jordan and then falls down. This comes down to the whole problem of refereeing culture, refereeing training, the spirit of the game. Because let me posit something to you. How different is that inherently than when Steven Dos Santos dribbles into the box, keeper comes out, and Steven gets to the ball first, but then kicks it away from the goal, and then intentionally drags his feet into the oncoming goalkeeper to make sure that there's contact, and then goes down. At least in the Charlotte scenario, the ball was kicked at the net. It was kicked towards the direction of the goal. They're both penalty kicks by definition of the law. And I can't, if you're mad about the awarding of this one in Charlotte, then you better have been upset inherently in the spirit of the game about the decision that Dos Santos had here at home at Al Lang several weeks ago, because inherently they're almost the exact same thing.
I mean, now we're asking fans to be logical and unbiased, and that's not what we're here for. let's see. Of all, and I'm trying to remember some of the details because that USA Mexico game, CONCACAF.
Oh yes. By the way, I'm going to just jump in and say that if you're not watching games in this region of soccer regularly, you are missing out on the pure essence of life.
That game was insane. I had to be up at 5 in the morning on Monday, and that post game ended at about 12:45.
Yeah. No, it was after one.
It was wild. It was worth it, though.
Oh, yeah.
We still don't know what happened to the guy that stormed the commentary booth. I see lots of questions about that line. I honestly don't care. Like, the guy jumped over the rail. If he dies, he dies. Whatever. If you're going to be an idiot, do something like that. Like, guys that ran on the field, you know, beat the crap out of them right there in the field. Like, get three guys with stun sticks and just tase the hell out of them and show it on TV. Don't cut the cameras away.
Just have a film crew there. And we'll make it. We'll just CGI Shield uniforms onto all of them. We'll make it look like Shield is beating up some Hydra agents. That's how we do that. We just fit it into a movie.
Yeah, that was a fun game. I'm just trying to think if the referee from the Rowdy Charlotte game had been in the middle for USA Mexico, would he have red carded McKenzie for the handball penalty?
That comes down to another question about that is another fundamental question about soccer reffing right now and the definitions of the law of the game. You know, there was a moment a couple years ago where they were going to try and make it a firm rule that if ever the ball touches the defender's arm in the box, it was always a penalty kick. And I was under the impression that they had revised that rule at least a little bit. Because the fact of the matter is that if you're an attacking player and you've got a crowd of defenders in front of you, you don't need to worry about shooting the ball on frame or trying to score the goal. Just aim for the darn arms of the defenders that are standing 3 feet in front of you. They can't physically get themselves out of the way. You know, the brain neurons literally don't fire that quickly and the nerves don't react that quickly to move the arm out of the way. You can't process it that quickly. If you're within 3 or 4 yards of a defender, just kick it as hard as you can into his arm if he's standing in the box, and you're 9 times out of 10 going to get the call.
Yeah, there was a run of games for a while years ago when Luis Suarez was at Liverpool where he just took the ball into the box and had no intention of going for the goal. He would just tip it up and smack it off a guy's hand. And he got at least 3 penalties called that way, and I was like, hey. Because it benefited my team, I enjoyed it. But man, yeah, that's and you know they were talking about that on the broadcast how you know the interpretation is supposed to be is the attacking player, I mean the defending player in this case, trying to make himself bigger is the arm or the hand in an unnatural position and
yeah, define that
on what I saw. I did, yeah, exactly. Based on what I saw, I wouldn't have made that call. And you know, the thing about replay is it's supposed to be, you know, clear and obvious. It wasn't called originally on the field. If you have to spend 5 or 6 minutes watching it on a replay, then it's not clear and obvious. You can't overturn the call on the field, in my opinion. And
hey, I mean, let's be real.
But, you know, it did get Martino thrown out, and that was kind of fun.
That was funny. You know, it's actually an interesting point because, like, obviously we had the events with the Tampa Bay Rowdies game this past weekend. Of course, the USA game, you know, most of the North American soccer fans watched it. If you ever had VAR in USL, if it ever got to the point where all the teams could, you know, technologically and financially be able to afford and implement that type of a system at every stadium. Personally, I'm a huge fan of VAR. I love VAR. I think it's good for the game. However, do you think there should be like a time limit on the actual reviewing process so you can't sit there at a monitor for 5 or 10 minutes type of deal? Like technically you can't just sit there unlimited. Like it's one of those things where it's like you get like 2 extra views or a minute of discussion with the VAR official, and if you can't overturn that call, then you don't. Would you like something like that where the referee actually had to make like a decision quickly?
I mean, if you're going to word this as clear and obvious, then I think there needs to be something. I don't know about like a running clock, but if you just say, look, here's 3 angles. Here's the best 3 angles we have of it. This is what you need to make your call off of, because it's more than what they get, you know, in the heat of the moment. They're seeing it from, if you get like a, you know, a front, back and side angle, slow it down. Watch those 3 angles and you got to make your decision. You know, obviously the VAR officials see something. That's why he signals to the center referee and says, hey, come over and check this out. But you've got to be able to do that quickly. Although I didn't, you know, at least it gave us the emphatic gesticulation towards the penalty spot in each case, which I thought that was great.
You know, look, he's going to get a lot of heat for this, the referee officials and the crew for that game. I honestly can say that I very much have enjoyed almost every game that center official has refereed in games in no matter the league, no matter the stage. I have always enjoyed his refereeing. I can honestly say that I'm not I like him as a ref.
You gonna swap shirts after a game sometime?
Don't tempt me, sir. I also say this. I'll say this. When it comes to major broadcasts, this is why you need to have an actual FIFA ranked. Like if you're doing a FIFA ranked, you know, broadcast, you should have a FIFA ranked official to give some clarifications and background. Because, you know, hearing the opinions of players for ex players is one thing, but hearing the opinion of an actual ref is entirely different. And I think that's something that game lacked in the moment for the broadcast in the English language, at least. You know, it lacked in that moment. So I think that's something, especially like, again, USL, when you're talking about like the championship games and things like that, you may not have VAR, but having somebody that you could talk to for a referee decision, maybe at halftime or a post-game show, like having somebody that you could, I think that adds something to the quality of that broadcast.
Especially if you don't get anybody post game to talk about any of the decisions that were made. Yeah. Yeah, if you could put someone in halftime or in a post game, wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, of course, trotted out a lot of faces that we haven't seen, not just like in the season in general per se, but certainly not in a starting lineup. In some of them, not in the positions that we've normally been able to see them this year. We had a normal back three. We had, you know, obviously starting keeper was fine. Deion Harris came in and started as an outside midfielder. Sebastian Gallgaard was an outside midfielder to start the match. We had Lewis Hilton and Jan Ekra playing together in the middle. And then we played with a pseudo three-striker formation with Sebastian Gonzotti, Zach Steinberger, and Matthew Serbell. I gotta say, and especially in the first half, it absolutely flat out unquestionably failed.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Why did it fail? I honestly think the way that game played, Charlotte intentionally played deep, played compact, did not allow themselves to get spread out, and we did nothing to try and loosen that formation up. Everybody was standing around. Everybody was waiting for just this, like, magical gap to appear, and nobody was stepping up to the plate to make the extra off the ball run to try and draw defenders out of position. Nobody was there making that kind of run. Nobody was swapping. Like, when you're playing three strikers and four mids against a team that is bunkering back, those strikers have to drop back. Those midfielders have to overlap on them. The strikers themselves have to be all over the place. You can't just be, okay, you're left striker, you're center, you're right, and you guys can only stay on your third of the pitch. When you're playing against a compact team, you absolutely have to move around. And our guys absolutely did not do that.
No. And, you know, the one thing that jumped out to me, and I remember hearing them even saying it on the broadcast, like, it reminded me of that game against Pittsburgh in the Open Cup forever ago.
I was there. I remember that game. I am glad you're reminding me of it.
Charlotte just moved at will through the midfield. It's almost like they weren't there. And I don't know if that's a combination of, you know, the several games in a short time frame with some travel and, you know, short turnaround, if it's the formation and personnel changes or a combination of all three. But yeah, that first half just, yeah, did not look good at all.
It's worth pointing out that in the entirety of that game, the entirety of it, if you're being gracious with the touch maps, we actually only touched the ball. Actually, you know what? No, let's be strict on the touch maps. we only touched the ball 10 times in the 18-yard box of Charlotte the entire match. 18 touches. No, sorry. I'm sorry. 10. 10 touches. I misspoke there for a minute. I apologize.
Yeah.
10 touches. On a game that we had 60% of the possession, 61%. Let's make it worse. Mm-hmm. 10 touches. I think for me, the ugliest moment of the match. Late in the game, ball gets crossed in from the outside, and our guy at the top of the box with a clear, with nobody in, directly in front of him. So he's got a rough angle at the net. It's not completely obstructed from the get. Instead of taking the shot as he's coming to the ball, decides to play a dummy instead.
To no one.
And there's nobody there. Now, here's the thing. I'm not as offended about the fact that nobody's there. The whole idea of a dummy is that you're taking that risk in the first place, right? I mean, that's part of the game. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I'm not upset that he tried to be creative in the moment. What I'm upset about is the fact that in a game that you're down 1-0 extremely late and you have an opportunity of taking a shot on goal and you absolutely don't take that shot 10 out of 10 times, that's the problem that I have.
Yeah.
If it's a tie game, if you're up in a game and you're trying to make something happen, make okay. But at a certain point, you've got to start being greedy.
Right. You've just got to play direct at some point. Stop looking for the extra pass or the perfect cross. Nothing's worked all game. Don't keep doing it.
In a game where you had literally one shot on goal the whole match,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not a game where creative movement isn't getting good. You know, again, I don't mind the idea. If you're playing in a game where you're getting a lot of shots, but they're all like kind of bad shots, you know, they're all outside the 18, you know, that kind of thing. They're not clear, a lot of deflections. Yeah, trying to get creative on the ball because the opposing defense is really playing you tight and hard. Okay, that's fine. But when you're playing a game like this where you haven't had to test the opposing goalkeeper the entire freaking night, you've got to just take the shot at that point. And I think for me, that was one of the telling moments of the attitude of the match. And I think that and the fact that just we haven't figured out really how to play without crossing the ball in, because that match was all about crosses. And guys, we don't have a target guy for that. What are we doing?
Yeah. And I don't have, I mean, there's lots of specific moments that stand out, but looking at the stats is where you start to really see kind of what went wrong in this game. 4 offsides. Like we've got to get better than that. You know, controlled possession, controlled, you know, we had higher passing accuracy and higher passing accuracy in the opponent's half of the field, but couldn't finish. Defensively, which usually is one of our saving graces, something like 8 clearances, and Charlotte had 4 or 5 shots from inside the box. On the other end, Charlotte with 21 clearances, just again going to show how we just could not clear that out. I think there was something like 18 crosses, and you know, 4 or 5 were successful. Something like 22% was the accuracy on that. Man, I know you hate to call it a long road trip, but it's the first road trip of the year and you've played in 2 different cities in 3 different days. And you're just kind of maybe at this point leaning on what has always worked for you, but nothing was working. It was
Sebastian Gazzotti. You've
definitely seen the last 2 games where we have missed Steven Dos Santos and maybe kind of gotten used to, we'll put it up there and see what Steven can do with it or Forrest can do with it.
I mean, think about this for a minute. I mean, we had one shot on goal as a team, right? Shot on goal. But let's just take regular shots, for example. Matthew Serbelle, starting striker, 0 shots. Sebastian Gonzatti, starting striker, 0 shots. Zach Steinberger, 1 shot, and it was blocked. So it doesn't really count really as on goal or off goal, just a block shot.
Right.
That's your starting 3 strikers for that match. 1 shot. Not even actually making it out. It was considered a block shot. That's it. There's your offensive output from your 3 striker formation against Charlotte. I don't want to rail into it too heavy. It's just one game. We tried something a little different. We had player rotation that was pretty heavy. But that was heavily disappointing by really everybody involved.
Yeah. You know, normally we do the good, bad, ugly. I mean, the good, Lauro's save. I mean, that to me, I didn't watch the tweeted out highlights because pretty much in terms of what the Rowdies did, that's it. Maybe his save on Dane Kelly's like wild volley that almost went in
that
top
shot,
corner.
That
for as much as I've crapped all over Dane Kelly in the last couple of shows, like I think he's been listening and he came out to prove me wrong and he damn did.
I'm just gonna say if Dane Kelly is doing that for the rest of the season, that team has a chance at being a contender for a playoff spot because that shot was fantastic.
Yeah. A whole lot of bad. And a whole lot of ugly too. I know you've got one specific ugly though, so shout that out.
I want to say this. Can we just chuckle at the officially announced attendance for that match? 2,380. I don't care who you are. I don't care what stadium you're in. That was not 2,380 people.
You know, I'm bad at math. But I'm glad to know there's someone else out there who is about 5 times worse because, yeah, no.
That is just,
no.
I think we, what was there? Not even 100 people on the far side of the stadium for that match? I mean,
I don't know what the regulations in Charlotte, I'm going to assume it's probably like most of the country at this point, but fans there are doing a pretty good job social distancing. Pretty good job.
Well, let's put a fork in this one. It's a stinky way to lose a first game, but it also, I mean, with the rotation, games in a short span, it's you got a 2-game lead in the conference. You come out of it still with a 2-game lead in the conference, thanks to all the help that we're about to take, you know, review for those matches and the scores here. But it really, really, really stinks. I do have to chuckle though. The yellow cards on Langsdorf and Adebayo, I thought both of them were garbage. I didn't think either one of them really deserved a yellow in the moment.
Neither of them thought so either. I remember both of them vehemently disagreeing. Luckily, not getting another for dissent as well.
Yeah, I mean, officially speaking, what was it? Jordan Adebayo Smith had that card basically a minute into his appearance.
Yeah, he came on, and I can kind of respect the effort there at least, but yeah, that wasn't yellow card.
I didn't think that was a yellow card. I don't know. That was a bizarre decision. I know it's a subject call, certainly, because that was the one for the handball. It's a judgment call in the eyes of the referee. If they judge that a player is doing something in a more unsportsmanlike manner, you know, in that way, absolutely, they have the right to give the yellow card, 100%. I thought it was a little harsh. So, it is what it is. But like I said, the results elsewhere certainly helped.
Yeah, it was a wild week for the Atlantic Division. So last week, week ago, while we were on air, at least that night, actually probably earlier because we did a late show that night, Loudon, this Friday's opponent, lost 2-3 to Pittsburgh. Rowdies, of course, beat New York 1-0. On the 5th, Hartford with a touchdown over Red Bulls, including one that went in from about midway of the field, ended up as, I believe, number one on SportsCenter's top 10. Big night for Hartford, and then kind of makes me feel bad. Like, we beat them 1-0, but again, New York in the same situation kind of we were, except, you know, they were at home for the first game 3 days before. Then 3 days later, on the 6th, Pittsburgh lost to Austin Bold in a cross-conference game. Miami, I remember at one point being up 2-0 against Rio Grande Valley and feeling very confident in themselves based on their Twitter account. I knew at one point that RGV had come back and tied it at 2, and then I stopped paying attention to it. And then I think yesterday, as I was typing these show notes up, I was like, holy crap, they were 4-2. Miami blew a 2-goal lead and lost 4-2 to Rio Grande Valley. And then last night, Loudoun drops another one, 1-0 at home to Charleston. Coming up between now and next week, we've got a couple of more Atlantic Division games besides the Rowdies-Loudoun clash coming up on Friday. You've got Charleston is hosting New York, Pittsburgh hosting Miami, and Charlotte hosting Hartford. Charlotte, Hartford, and Miami are the other three teams in playoff contention right now with our standings in the Atlantic Division. The Rowdies are on top with 15 points, 5 wins, and a loss. Hartford in second, 10 points, 3 wins, no losses, and 1 draw. Charlotte, 9 points with 3 wins and 2 losses. Miami with 9 points, 3 wins, and 3 losses. Then down in the in danger of missing the playoffs if the season ended today, which would be a really weird season because that's only 6 games for some of us. Pittsburgh with 7 points, 2 wins, 3 losses, and a draw. Charleston, 5 points off of 1 win, 1 loss, 2 draws. Red Bull, 2, 5 points, 1 win, 5 losses, and 2 draws. And a negative 12 goal difference. I mean, you know, more than half of that comes in that game against Hartford. But Red Bulls just are not good at all this year. And at the very bottom of the division, the team that we are going to face on Friday, Loudoun United, 3 points off of 1 win, 4 losses, no draws. So if you're going to lose one, this was a good week to go ahead and lose one because we didn't really lose that much ground.
I think the thing that's interesting about this match, as far as, well, not this match, but the match with New York Red Bulls and Hartford, a lot of people took that away. There was even some comments online. It was like, oh, there's a lot of New York Red Bulls players that are, you know, were guesting in that match. I mean, yeah. And it also was like just a complete off weekend for them too in their Major League Soccer schedule. So it's like, who cares?
Right.
You know, like it's not like they have anything to play for. It's just a warm up scrimmage for them. What I will say is this, and this is the significant takeaway I have for that game. Adding negative 7 to your goal differential is brutal. If that team can turn a corner and Wolniak can get some of those guys to get results, because they looked good against the Rowdies. You know, that was something that we mentioned. It did not look like a team that's only won one game. Now it's 1-8. They didn't look like that. You could see that the talent was there. If Wolniak can get that team to competing for a playoff spot, which, by the way, they're only 4 points out, may I add, that goal differential for that negative 7 game, that could end up being brutal because they're now at a negative 12 overall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I find is an interesting takeaway from that. The result itself I'm not reading into as far as the quality of the New York side because it was a lot of guest players on an off weekend for Major League Soccer. Who really gives a crap? But that's the significant takeaway. That may end up having end-of-season playoff implications there if New York can turn things around.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see what happens there. But I just love that, you know, if you look at the spread of goal difference, you know, there's a difference of 20 goals between the Rowdies at a plus 8 and Red Bulls at a minus 12. Even Hartford right now, by virtue of that 7-0 win, now has the best goal difference at a plus 9. But, you know, it was the Rowdies and then everyone else by far, because that would have left Hartford with 2 outside of that game. And then, you know, only 3 teams have a positive goal difference right now. Miami's in the playoff spots right now with a negative one goal differential, and you know, splitting their games evenly, three wins, three losses. So let's move on to some club and league news, and then we'll talk about this weekend's game, or this, I keep saying this weekend. It's Friday. I mean, I guess it's technically the weekend, but close enough. So there's not really a ton of league club news. We had a couple stuff, a couple things come out yesterday and today, some publicly and some, you know, details that were fed to us. And so we're going to talk, play the Zach Steinberger interview here in just a minute. But a couple things coming up. Number one, congratulations to Neil Collins, the USL Coach of the Month for April and May. Neil was sat in on his press call earlier today. Neil is, you know, exactly who Neil is, gave all the credit to the players and the staff and the assistant coaches and everyone else who has made him look good in these first couple games. Although I think he has something to do with it, but you know, Neil is, he even says, I'm not really comfortable. It's like accepting the praise and talking about it. It's a team award, based on the efforts of everybody else. Some little news that we got, and this is literally all that we have. It's not like we know the answer and we're hiding something here, although I might be able to make a guess. Might have a feeling about this. We should be hearing very soon some information on the new Rowdies Academy team, on the roster and the coaching staff. I can confirm, I feel like I'm doing the English newspaper thing, I can exclusively reveal that the head coach of the new Rowdies Academy team is a former Rowdy himself. I have no idea who it is, but I have some ideas. So that'll be interesting. We'll hear, sounds like pretty shortly we'll have some more details about that. So stay tuned. Steven, do you want to take a guess at who you think it might be, or who do you hope? Now, it wasn't said. I didn't go back and ask, and it wasn't said. Didn't say whether it was a modern era former Rowdy or not.
And that's why I'm not making a comment, because I am not going to say something, because who there's. So the last count that I understood, there's what, six or seven local, like just locally based Rowdies of the current and former eras that are involved in local coach scene right now, coaching right. And training scene. So there's too many names to pick. Some of them are still pretty active in their own leagues. Who knows if they're going to be able to do like joint training as, you know, running basically both things at the same time. Or participating in both at the very least. So it's a little hard to speculate without knowing who it is myself directly. I'm not going to speculate. There's too many names out there.
I'm comfortable in ruling out. I'll go ahead and say it. It's not going to be Rodney Marsh. I don't think he's giving up the Sirius XM gig for this. And I'll also rule out, in my opinion, a recent Rowdy, not current. I'm going to say it's not Georgie Ristoff either. I think he's having too much fun with the futsal thing. I have two other names in mind for who it could be. I'm not going to throw those out there yet. We'll see. But let's go ahead and play my chat with Zach. Talked to Zach Steinberger earlier. Wanted to get him on live for the show, but you know, it's the off day. It's 8 o'clock at night. Not always the most convenient time. About all kinds of things. I had to ask him about that goal. Louisville City Eastern Conference Championship.
Oh yeah.
Had to talk about that goal. And I know he's talked about it, but I watched some more replays of it and talked to him a little bit about that. Talked to him about, you know, he's been here for three seasons now, or this is his third season. Like he's seen some change. And so we talked about the similarities and differences between the team when he got here and some of the things that stand out now. And kind of his excitement about playing in front of a hopefully packed stadium on Friday, and then about some of the causes he's involved with, especially in the month of June. So rather than me just giving the whole interview away, I'm actually going to play it and let Zach talk to you, because listening to him is a lot better than listening to either of us. Be thankful. You guys get like 15 minutes tonight of not me or Steven talking. That's always a benefit. All right, here we go. So we're joined tonight by Zach Steinberger from your Tampa Bay Rowdies, our Tampa Bay Rowdies, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Zach, I want to, when we set this up, I started thinking about what I wanted to talk to you about, and there are a couple things that jumped out, but I want to go back to last season just for a little bit. And I know you've been asked this one a bunch of times, but I'm gonna bring it up again. You know, it's a weird season with the different groups and the different way that the playoffs are structured and everything. But you guys went out in the group. You go into the playoffs, and I don't want to give away specifically how old I am, but I'm watching this playoff run, and it's reminding me of the All Valley Karate Championship from Karate Kid back in the Rowdies are kind of going through it like Daniel LaRusso. You take out Birmingham, you deal with Charleston, who kind of had your number in the regular season, and it all ends up in Louisville, which, you know, Louisville's been kind of a tough out for the Rowdies for a while, and you know, at least for once you're not playing at Slugger Field, but you go in there into their brand new stadium, and 4 minutes into the game, you score a goal that, you know, I know when you first joined the club, we talked about Steinbangers, and this probably doesn't count in your mind as like typical Steinbanger, but the situation it was in, the momentum it gave the team, everything, in that Eastern Conference Championship game, to me it qualifies as a Steinbanger. And I'm watching the replay of it a couple times today, and you're kind of drifting in towards the box, and all of a sudden you make your run and you cut in, and like, was this something you guys had practiced because you had seen something on tape that you thought you could take advantage of? Was it just something that kind of developed organically and as the game was going on? Like, at what point did you know you were going to score?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, what a game, what a moment. But yeah, I mean, just to answer your question, no, it was not something we worked on by, you know, it wasn't like a scripted play or anything like that. But actually, I mean, you know, that's a ball that Leo has played to me a couple times. And one in particular, I remember, was our season opener in Memphis in 2019. Leo played that exact same ball to me. And the I forget who the keeper was for Memphis. He was on loan for NYCFC. But he made an unreal save. And it was more or less the exact same thing, just a carbon copy. So it's something that – I don't know if it's something that Leo and I – you know, we just find each other on the field. You know, in really, in really impressive ways. I think he's, you know, he just found me, and, you know, I was made a run and put it in the back of the net, and it was a dream start to a conference final.
Yeah. I think that really set, I mean, I know going into that game, you know, just as a fan, I was like, you know, if we could just get an early goal, like we just, better. We, you know, our defense is so strong. We seem to give more confidence. And I don't even think I expected anything that early. I mean, it looks like you caught them off guard, and you know, it was game on from there. So you've been with the Rowdies for a couple seasons now. What is this, your third season, fourth season with the Rowdies?
Third season.
So there's been lots of changes on and off the pitch. But this year, not a whole lot has changed, especially in terms of the rosters. A lot of carryover from last year. A lot of continuity, which I think has contributed to this hot start you guys have gotten off to. How would you compare this year and maybe this team to previous seasons? What's the biggest difference or maybe the biggest similarity? Like, what's the biggest thing contributing to the success this year so far?
Oh, I think, you know, I mean, if you look at, you know, our 2019 team, I mean, on paper, we were, you know, so talented. But you know what we improved on after 2019 was just the standard of training every day, the standard that everyone in the locker room set for themselves, and in doing so, the collective team. And we've taken what we were able to do in 2020, which was raise the standard every day in training, every game, every season. And we've, you know, built on that. And, you know, I think, you know, if we can keep doing what we're doing, and that's just getting better every day and improving the standard day by day, week by week, we're going to be exactly where we want to be at the end of this.
Yeah. Neil Collins had his press call earlier this afternoon, and Connor Antley was in there. And one of the things that Connor mentioned was that, You know, no offense to any other teams he's played for in the past, but he feels like he's developed more in the few months that he's been here than he has at any other club. What is it about the way that Neil runs this team that seems to get the best out of you guys, get you guys ready for these games every weekend?
I mean, Neil is an extension of everyone in that locker room, right? I mean, he sets the standard for us every day, you know, just like every single one of us. We hold each other accountable. We hold everyone that steps on the field every day. We all hold each other accountable. You know, there's no days off. Every day is a chance to get better. And Neil is somebody who has implemented that type of club culture, and every single player has bought in. And that makes us it makes this team very impressive. The fact that every single day, you know, everyone is at it, or is being pushed to be at it. Maybe if they're not quite at their best, where a lot of other clubs I've been a part of, you don't really, it's really tough to implement that culture. And it's even tougher to have everyone buy into it. And Neil has done an incredible job making sure that whoever is, come in under, you know, his tutelage, you know, has bought into that and has made it even better than it was in years past. I mean, I said at the end of the 2020 season, I mean, I was a really special group of guys, and you know, it's improved, and it's improving every week. So as long as we can keep doing that and keep pushing our own standards, you know, every week, every day, every week, every game, that's something that we're going to focus on. And if we can keep that focus, everything else will kind of fall into place.
You know, I remember when Neil took the head coaching job, as fans, one of the things that we were kind of concerned about was, man, we're taking one of our best players off the field to become the head coach. And, you know, is that going to cause more problems maybe than it might fix? And Neil obviously backed himself to do the job and has proven to be more than capable of it. Does the fact that he was in, you know, in your guys' shoes literally, you know, two or three seasons ago, that he's played recently and played for this club, does that make a difference in maybe the way he's viewed and the way he runs the team?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously having someone who was a player become a coach always just it gives you a higher level understanding of what motivates a player, what a player needs. And Neil was obviously one hell of a player, and our entire staff, I mean, Kevin Foley and Chad Bird, I mean, they're both, you know, obviously incredible players. And so they really are, you know, players, coaches. They know that, you know, we want to compete, and they give us the opportunity to compete every day. But they also understand, you know, the time for rest and recovery, and so for them, I mean, it's been impressive to see them develop as a coaching staff as well, because, you know, we're all in this together, and we're all growing, and we're all, you know, trying to improve our own standards again individually and collectively. And I think, you know, under them, we've all been able to do that.
So you guys are coming off the first road trip of the season and unfortunately first loss of the season, but you get to come back home on Friday and play at Al Lang. And for the first time in like 600 something days, I think the team posted the other day, the stadium is going to be open to full capacity. What does it mean for you guys, and how is it going to feel to be playing in front of a packed Al Lang once again?
No, I mean, gosh, it feels like it's been forever since it's been full capacity. You know, we're super excited to see all the fans out there and, you know, have that atmosphere back that we've been getting a taste of for a little bit now. And now we'll get, you know, the whole enchilada. So we're pretty excited.
Yeah. My regular seats now are out in that new berm area. So we've kind of had a full, that area has been kind of, you know, filled up with its capacity for a while. It's going to be fun to see the rest of the stadium kind of fill in and see what it's like. So the big thing I wanted to talk to you about today was, you know, June is Pride Month, and there's lots of fan and player-led initiatives going on. Rouse Mob's participating in Pride Razor, and they've got commitments for, it's like something like $250 plus a goal for all the games in June. And I know you're working with Playing for Pride and Athlete Ally. And you've also been really outspoken on the issue of LGBTQ rights. Why is this such an important thing for you personally? And you know, this is 1 month and there's a couple games going on, but do you have any kind of specific plans for continuing to advocate for equality after June's over?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, you know, it's funny you ask, because playing for Pride and Athlete Ally, when I originally started 4 years ago, they asked me the same question, you know, what was my motivation to put my voice behind the LGBTQ community? And honestly, I don't have, you know, anyone that has made a profound impact on me or anything like that. It was simply just brought to my attention, and it was something that I just wanted to put my voice behind. It seemed like such a simple thing that I think so many people don't understand. It's, you know, it's sports, you know, it's something that everyone should have access to. It's something everyone, it should be a safe space for everybody. So, you know, seeing what is, you know, being done all over the country and even in our state to try and prevent, you know, inclusion for, you know, the LGBTQ community in sports is something that I am very passionate about, you know, doing everything I can to make sure that every single person has the opportunity to play whatever sport, you know, they want to, regardless of anything else, and to feel safe. You know, so for me, you know, I'm just like every month of June, I'm doing a contribution and asking everyone that is willing to match or at least donate something. I'm doing $20 per win, $20 per goal, and then $20 per shutout. So, and then obviously, you know, I'm doing my best to attend all the Pride fundraisers. We're doing one actually this Saturday at Schwab Park, and you know, trying to do, you know, my absolute best to just bring as much awareness to it as possible. And you know, and obviously, there's so many other things going on in the world right now, and just trying to, you know, bring awareness to everybody, and doing my part to try and make the world a better place. You know, however that is.
Yeah, we've had, you know, when Playing for Pride got started a couple years ago, we've had Austin Deluz on a couple times to talk about it, and it's kind of an important thing to him, too. And it makes me kind of think, in my day job, I teach U.S. history in middle school, and there's a documentary you watch about the Civil Rights era, and this news reporter interviews this young white college kid, and he's like, you know, why do you feel like this is your responsibility? And he's like, I feel it's like it's everyone's responsibility, but not everyone's stepping up and doing it. So, even though it's not something that maybe you connect to personally, setting the example maybe for everybody else is kind of an important reason to be part of this and to take part in it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, if you've got a voice, why not use it for good?
All right, Zach. Hey, I appreciate you again coming on. We look forward to seeing you guys out there on Friday, hopefully in front of a full packed, loud Al Lang for a game, fun game against Loudon. Hopefully get back on the winning track. Thanks for joining us tonight, and I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, so that was cool. It was cool to sit and talk to him. We haven't really talked to him in a little while. I appreciate him taking some time tonight to come on and join us. I didn't expect to go into that thing making Karate Kid and civil rights references in the same interview, but pretty good. I blame Dan for all this. I'm terrified to make movie references with anybody because every time I say something to Dan, he's just like, I've never seen that. So I literally, before I even started the interview, I had to DM him real quick. And I was just like, Dan, tell me if you've seen this movie, because if you've seen it, then I'm pretty sure Zach has. And I'm like, Karate Kid, OG, 1980s. He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, I feel good about it. And you know, even if he hasn't, Zach did a good enough job playing along, but I'm pretty sure he's seen it. I mean, it's Karate Kid, right? Everyone's seen Karate Kid.
I would think so. I mean, I'm not even saying everybody has to like Karate Kid, but you've at least had to have seen it.
I like it. I still like it. Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of not my cup of tea.
It's the beginning of my lifelong crush on Elizabeth Shue. So there's, you know, there's some mitigating factors in there. Definitely some mitigating factors watching it, and I even went back after I thought of the whole thing about how the playoff, and I was like, you know, trying to reconcile in my head, how are the Rowdies like the plucky underdog Daniel LaRusso with the horrible accent and, you know, fish out of water. And I was like, oh, I don't care. I'm going with it. I even went back and watched the tournament for a little bit, clips online, just to get a feeling. And I'm like, yeah, there goes Charleston. Boom. Yeah. Steinbrenner's goal against Louisville. It all works in my head. Very little does these days, but that all works in my head. All right. The other major news, and this is not specifically club related, but at least at this point, but could be in the near future. The USL finally announced the, I don't know if we're calling this worst kept secret, but everyone's been talking about this for a while now. The W League, the revival of the USL W League, the women's league that was around from 1995 to 2015, I believe, originally, and then has been on hiatus for a while. It's a pre-professional league, so kind of like the USL 2, like League 2 kind of level. They're actually going to follow the League 2 scheduling timeline as far as kicking off in, I think it's in July, and then, or they're ending in July, one of those. But it's, they kind of follow that summer schedule. It's going to launch again in 2022. They are expecting 30 clubs for the first season. 8 founder clubs were announced yesterday: Chattanooga Red Wolves, Hartford Athletic, DC United, Loudoun United, Greenville Triumph, Caw Valley FC, which is a League 2 team, a like independently owned group from out of Minnesota that's going to start a women's club, South Georgia Tormenta, and Queensboro FC. Rowdies, like we said, not mentioned in there at first. But if we go back to our critically acclaimed interview with Brian Auld from a while back, he did have some comments, because I did bring this topic up with him. Not the, like, you know, specifically committed in terms of timeline, in terms of anything else, but says it is something that they want to do, they want to bring back, and it sounds like what they're looking for in terms of developing is what this W League is going to be. So nothing official, but it would not surprise me, in my opinion, if, you know, there's 8 clubs now. He said they're expecting 30 for the first season. Would not shock me if we're in that 30 somewhere.
No, of course, it's also something we've been talking about in some form or fashion for several years now. From the club, not even just us speculating. The club has been talking about this for several years. We even brought a somebody that was going to be a part of the unsubs that was, you know, and obviously she still is, but that was going to be dedicated to making sure that we had good coverage for the women's game too. And at this point, it's just, I'll believe it when I see it. I'm excited for the possibility of it. I would love for that to be a thing. I mean, a year ago, we were on the verge. We had a schedule out for a women's team. I mean, think about that. That's how close all of this was. We had a schedule. There were like weekends that had like double headers, the U23 games. Like, we had like the whole thing. It looked amazing. And then, of course, everything got snatched out from under us. And it's just, brutal. See, absolutely
if
brutal.
For no other reason, they have to do it so we can get Lizzie doing stuff, because Lizzie's fantastic and has done awesome stuff the few times we've been able to give her a chance to do it. And like, we need to. So yeah, definitely. In kind of relation to that, Ralph's Mob tweeted out yesterday a poll: would you be interested in the Rowdies having a USL W League team? The Amateur Women's League USL launched today. No rumors of this happening so far, but we want to see what you guys think. Yes, the options were yes, no, and prefer pro women's footy, like an NWSL level team. I'm going to combine the yeses and the prefer pro women's footy into one lump, give you 85% say yes, they would like some version of women's football under the Rowdies umbrella. 15% said no. Okay. 85%, 71.7, so 72% say yes, 13% say prefer pro women's footy. Sure, love it too. If that's where you're at, if you're in that 13%, then if they launch this W League team, if you want to get to the point where there is a professional level, an NWSL level team, then hopefully you will be part of supporting the W League team, because that's going to be a key factor that is going to determine how far the team is willing to go with this, I would think.
Not to mention considering the fact that, you know, how we would be supporting that team in general. And I'm not talking like supporter culture per se, though that would have to be a discussion everybody would have to have. You know, what, like, how financially involved? I mean, it's one thing to say, yes, I would love an amateur team. Okay, great. Are you willing to spend $10 a ticket? I mean, I know that, like, you know, a year ago when we were talking about, you know, a women's team, it was going to be free for, like, season ticket holders or free for everybody in general. But, right. You know, that's not technically speaking a potentially long-term viable option, you know? So, like, would you put a few bucks down? You know, would you do it? Would you buy season tickets if it was on a season ticket thing? Like, if it was a pro team, for example, you'd certainly have tickets on its own. You know, it's one thing to verbally say it on social. Would you actually put your mouth, well, money where your mouth is? And, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't know. I'm the pessimist, right? This is what I am known for. Dan gave me a prediction for the pregame show ahead of the Charlotte as being the Down and Drury type. And I was the only one officially to not predict a win. And I'm just saying, turned out to be right. I'm a pessimist about the idea of long-term professional soccer for women's sports in Tampa Bay. I don't think the market, we barely, I mean, I don't want to say barely, but we have enough to keep the Rowdies going on a professional level. I don't think there's enough, you know, interested soccer dollars for, you know, non-MLS, you know, dollars in the marketplace to support two teams adequately. When it comes to the pro ranks, I think the amateur ranks work. It's just a question of, from a club perspective, of what's the most sustainable model.
Right.
And whether, you know, there's enough people to do an amateur level. I like the idea of the amateur level. I think that's a good idea. Until the Rowdies take that extra step. Because, I mean, we're a solid lower division club. But until we take a step to being, like, basically on the verge of being, like, a lower-end major league club when it comes to the size of the fan base, the size of the finances, you know, as far as, like, you know, yearly operating income and things like that. I mean, obviously, it's one thing to just have deep-pocketed owners who just splash money. It's another to actually be a massive revenue generator. You know, until we're in those discussions, you know, it's, I don't know, there's a few things to think about. No question, I think, in my mind.
I definitely would like to see what happens. So whether it's something that's viable or not, I'd like to see the effort and the attempt made. Also, you know, now if this is going to be another league coming in and it's going to kind of be at a different level than some of the other leagues out there, like, let's just go ahead and get a U.S. Women's Open Cup at it while we're at it. I know you'd be there for that. Anything, just Open Cup and you're in.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's take a look at Friday's opponent, Loudoun United. Head coach, and I had to actually do some research on this guy because I have no idea who he was. I don't remember if he was a coach last year or not. He might have been. They are currently 1-4-0 on the season, which means they have matched their win total from last season already. And are only like 5 losses away from matching their loss. So they're halfway there. Head coach is Ryan Martin. He's a former Real Salt Lake player. He was an assistant coach at FC Cincinnati when they first started, was part of building that initial roster, you know, back when they were good in the league that they played in. And had been the director of the DC United Academy. Not sure if he's kind of like, you know, multitasking and holding that role still, but he came to Loudoun United via the DCU Academy. Their home stadium is Segra Field in Leesburg, Virginia, which doesn't matter because they're playing at the Cathedral this Friday. Their last game, they lost last night 1-0 to Charleston. Last season, like we said, they finished 1-9-3. They were last in Group F, 17th in the Eastern Conference, did not qualify for the playoffs.
And as they are a reserve team, if there was an Open Cup going on, they are not allowed to participate in that either. They're DC United's reserve team. I'm not even going to try and go over roster changes from offseason and you know losses and additions because who knows. And also MLS is on international break with the U.S. men's team playing right now. They're off until their next game is next weekend on the 19th. So there's a possibility that we could see some players loaned out from DC United down to Loudoun. Haven't heard anything yet. That information usually comes out seemingly at the very last minute, but who knows? It's possible. So far this season, their goal and shot leader is Giovanni Bolivar with 2 goals on 16 shots. In terms of assists, Diego Gomez, Kairu Amustafa, I could say it in my head and I just bungled it getting it out there, and the aforementioned Bolivar, all tied with 1 assist on the season. They have not scored. I think they've scored 5 goals total. The Rowdies did more than that in their first 2 games combined. Chances created, their leader in that category is Jeremy Garay with 12, and Jermaine Forda leads them with 11 saves in between the pipes and has kept 1 clean sheet on the season. Steven, you won't be surprised to know that Neil Collins said, hey, this is a really good team, and the results have not necessarily reflected the performances they've put in or the talent on the roster, because that's a very Neil Collins thing to say about a team like Loudoun United. I am not Neil Collins. I'm only like a quarter Scottish. I'm not full Scottish like he is. So when I look at this, I say this is the perfect bounce-back game. You're at home. You're in front of your fans. You're playing against a bad team. I can already see you don't agree. You've got like this is a trap game look on your face. To me, this is perfect. You're coming off that first loss. We're going to see how they respond. We're going to see the mentality. We're going to see the hunger. We're going to see the desire, which I believe will be there for a Neil Collins coach team with guys like Seba Guenzadi and Forrest Lasso and everybody else on the pitch. I'm going to throw my prediction out there first and be the first one to walk off the plank. I'm going 4-0 to the lads. And not even as like the typical Rowdies 4-0 to the lads meme. Like, I believe it. This is a 4-0 game waiting to happen.
I think you're absolutely crazy because every game that Loudoun has played up to this point has been a 1-goal game. And I firmly believe that that trend will continue. I believe that the Tampa Bay Rowdies will walk away with a 1-0 victory over Loudoun.
I mean, it'll be 1-0 in like the first 15 minutes, sure. I can see that. We're winning this 4-0. Dan's not here, so we're going to put in a prediction for him. You know, Dan just isn't quite as confident right now. He's got us winning 2-1. I don't know who he thinks is going to score on Evan Lauro, and Evan Lauro should be pretty mad at Dan for making that prediction, I would say. But that's where it is. That's where it is.
Well, we're going to come to the end of the show here. We always end it with a we love you. Now, sometimes we do individuals, but I'm doing a group. My we love you for this week is every person that traveled to Charlotte to watch that debacle of a match. Nancy, of course, Adam's already there, the Rothwells, the Soldiers, all of you guys, everybody involved. Thank you for giving it away a presence. It reminds me of something that I had dreamed of years ago. I would love to have away sections at every Rowdies road game during a season. Doesn't have to be 100 people, even if it was like 10. 10 vocal Rowdies fans in an organized way, singing some songs or whatever at every Rowdies game. That's always been a dream of mine. I've always thought that'd be the coolest thing. Make us the biggest, the most well-known group out there as far as fan bases go in the league. I that would always be something cool in my mind. So thank you guys for traveling up there. Thank you guys for supporting the Rowdies while you were up there and being a great away supporter group. It was fantastic to watch and listen to you during that match.
So you're going to Vegas then?
I will neither confirm nor deny. No, I'm not. I'm not going to Vegas.
Neither am I. But I am thinking, because this was supposed to be the like inaugural game at Charlotte's new home in American Legion Memorial Stadium in downtown Charlotte. And Adam talked about it on the pregame show. There's a couple renovations still going on, probably about a month away. When the Rowdies return to Charlotte at the end of July, that game should be in the new stadium. And it'll be, I don't think it'll be the first, but it's going to be one of the first games. And I'm looking at my calendar and trying to see, and I think I can make it happen, that I am going to try and make the trip up there for that game. I've done the Charlotte game before. It's fun. They've got a good group of fans that I met up with, hung out with, got to meet Soccer Goose Ben and hang out with him for a while. Charlotte's a neat town, and I'm kind of playing. I'm actually at the point now where I'm trying to see what lower league teams need have games going on like that around that weekend. And of course, like, everyone's done with their season by then. I was like, ooh, I'll go see Greenville Triumph. No. Maybe Savannah Clovers. No. I'm looking up like UPSL and Nisa. Like, there's nothing. Maybe I could go see, you know, Tobacco Road or someone. No, I'm gonna find a lower division game to go to if I make this trip. I'm gonna do both of them, because that game, I'm gonna try and make this happen. We gotta figure out a way. I'm pretty sure I'm gonna make that trip at the end of July.
Well, I'll say this: Tampa Rowdies, of course, full capacity, Al Lang Stadium this upcoming weekend. First time in a year and a half that we've been able to have an unlimited number of people that we want in the building. It's also rainy season. It's also a new section. We're not used to this yet, not as a full group. So make sure you're prepared in case it does rain. The extra change of clothes, the towel in the car, the little plastic bag for your cell phone, you know, the whole nine yards. Just make sure you're ready. Make sure you're prepared. I don't want to see you guys running up into the shelter because you're scared of getting a little wet in case it does rain. Rain chances are low, but as we saw yesterday, that kind of changes.
Yeah.
Be ready. Have fun. Let's absolutely make sure, rain or shine, that this thing is one of the greatest returns back to Al Lang that we'll ever see.
So we've got fireworks going on after the game. You've also got, and thanks to David Morales for reminding me of this, Alexis Guerreros from the Cooligans is performing like 8 minutes away from Al Lang on Saturday night. Now, unfortunately, his set kicks off right around the time the game is supposed to end. Before, I think he starts at 9, so this game probably won't be over till 9:30. I was planning on going, even if I had to, like, you know, duck out early in the second half, but I am going to have my my daughter with me for Friday night for the game, and comedy bars are usually not the most productive places to take a 13-year-old, so I am unfortunately going to have to pass on this. I've been trying to work with them to see if we could get them to come roll by the stadium for the tailgate. I book club, I tailgate, whatever they're doing it now, because I don't know what the rules in the parking lot are now that the stadium's at full capacity. We'll let others decide that for us. Maybe he'll be able to swing by for that. But yeah, this man, I'm so looking forward to this. Like,
it's going to be a great game.
I hope so. Might we love you. In addition, I'm going to append one onto yours. Yes. Shout out to everybody who made the trip up to Charlotte. I too know the feeling of going to Charlotte and not seeing the result you were hoping for. Although at least I did get to see Dominic Oduro's rocket in person. Someone else that I became acquainted with that weekend was Jochen Graf, who posted online. At least I saw it today. I don't know how recently posted it. Expecting a child. So congrats to Jochen. We love you, bro. All right, Steven. To steal a phrase from Dan, let's kick this pig and get out of here.
Yes. All right. Wolfface, we appreciate you as always for letting us have the amazing music that you let us play for our intro of our show. Radio St. Pete and Radio St. Pete Online, thank you, thank you, thank you for giving us a chance to do a live broadcast. Maybe someday you'll hear us on the FM radio as well. There's always the possibility. Shamrock Pub, thank you so much always for the chances we get to do the live post-game shows from location and all the support that you give the show in general. If you are listening, please give us a share, give us a subscription, give us a rating on those platforms that allow you to, maybe leave a review, Mark. It helps get us in front of other people, the way the algorithm gods play that out. So please do that. Helps us get in front of all Rowdies fans, so that way everybody knows who we are, so you can get all the best information on the Tampa Rowdies. If you want to take that support to another level, Patreon is the best way to do it. It helps us pay the bills for running this show and the subscription services we need to post all these episodes every week. You can do as low as $1 a month. It definitely helps us. But if you go up to the higher levels, you do get to be a Patreon executive producer of the shows, and we do rotate those names during the year. So by all means, please, as aforementioned, Jeff Herndon is tonight's Patreon executive producer. Once again, we do say thank you to him. We also say thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie-cutter templates from places like Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, a Sunday league squad, maybe an adult team, or even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. Matt, speaking of jerseys, I believe there's only a few days left. If somebody wants to get a Ralph's Mob jersey, they did put those back onto another exclusive short pre-order. You've only got like a couple days to get that in. I believe Saturday. I think it ends Friday night or something like that, or Saturday. So, there is another opportunity if you didn't get one during the first batch. I've seen those jerseys everywhere in the building, in the cathedral.
I know. They look good. I need to get one.
I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be completely honest. They are better than what I expected them to be. I was not a huge fan of them when I saw them. I pre-ordered one anyways. I wasn't a huge fan.
That's high praise coming from you.
But they looked a lot better in person when they actually came out. So that it is really cool. Well, Matt, I think it's time. We're going to be, I believe we're going to be in the same place we were, barring weather, for the pregame show ahead of the Tampa Bay Rowdies match this Friday night. So if you are listening tonight, please, 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 you can listen, you can watch us for free on Twitch half an hour before the game starts. We will be doing a pregame show. We will have a guest. That guest will be awesome. And please give us some support over there on the Rowdies Gaming Twitch channel. And that, honestly, that's going to help us. The first week was a great, great test pilot episode. We're looking forward to seeing what other things we can introduce into this show. But yes, if you're at the stadium, if you're in the parking lot, make sure you give us a listen or a watch. So that way you're keeping up on everything that we're up to and doing, and you don't miss any cool stories and, you know, fun moments. With that, Matt, thank you for joining me tonight. Thank you, Tampa Rowdies fans, supporters, for joining tonight. And with that, go Rowdies. We love you. See you in a couple nights.
See ya.
The Rowdies are near, the Rowdies.